Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
I'm Arlene Cohen.
You're listening to the midweek version of the Fiber Talk twice weekly podcast for the Needle Artist.
Well, we're going to be artists this week.
Yeah, I think we're going to ride with that until I get bored, which probably be another week. Be my guess, well, yeah.
As long as we're not stabbing people this week, that's fine.
No, we'll be artists, yeah.
Good.
So, let's see. 1-inch needle minders are available, as are 2-inch needle minders in a combination package, which has been popular on the shop page at wetalkfiber.com. And Vaughn and I just put up, we just did Saturday? Yeah, Saturday it was, the Queen Sampler update. So we're moving along with that. Ooh, that Montenegrin stitch. I started doing that.
Uh-huh.
You know how I did the horizontal? There's a little horizontal stub before it goes up at a right angle.
Uh-huh.
Oh, the horizontal stub, man, that went together like nothing.
Okay.
And then I thought, oh, turning the corner to go at an angle, that went fine. And then the trouble started.
Yeah.
I restitched. Well, all right, I restitched 4 stitches on the angle enough that I wore out the silk and have to pull back 2 or 3 stitches of good stitching to finish it off so I can start a new one. So, but I think I figured out what I was doing wrong each time. So I think I have it, but, yeah, Montenegrin stitch is gonna, but on the horizontal, it was lightning. So
excellent.
It's part of the process. Yeah.
And of course, you guys talk about this Montenegrin stitch so much that I took out a book so I could be educated and taught, because I've never stitched it before. But there's always this sense of, but if you have a diagram, how hard can it be?
yeah.
So, but and then again, I am aware that there is an entire book devoted to this one stitch, because you guys have referred to that book. I don't own that book, but I do own a copy of The Proper Stitch, the Darlene Osteen book, The Proper Stitch.
Right.
And there's definitely a few pages of the various variations of it. And again, like, I'm looking at these, and there's diagrams, and there's, you know, again, I have not stitched this, so I'm not speaking from experience. But is it a case where you just kind of lose track of where you are, or what is it that gets you messed up when you're doing it? Like, I need to understand what's causing your difficulties.
Well, this is me. Now, Vaughn, I think, had less trouble than I'm having at this juncture. But she may have practiced more than me, and the horizontal part, I got a rhythm because I could see where the next movement went.
Okay.
So that was clean. And then the backside is clean. So I felt pretty good. But when you're going up the angle, that's where my mind has not locked into where does each stitch go as you go up the angle, because you still want to create. Basically, what you end up with on the backside is boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And on the front side, they're sort of boxes, but they're filled in. It's hard to describe.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the angle that stopped me and made me redo and redo. And turning the corners, now this Amy Minton book, see, she shows you how to turn a corner each way.
All the possible directions.
Yeah, whether you're going at an angle or you're doing a right angle, or I think she even has some where you're going on a curve of sorts. And it's not the same every time. And there's two ways that she shows. The book is really two parts. Two ways of doing the Montenegrin stitch. And Vaughn did the first way, and so I thought, well, for entertainment purposes, I'll do the second way. And I don't know that one's harder than the other, but it doesn't, you know, how like if you make an X, I mean, that's, you get a rhythm and you go, and then you start to see how you can branch off of that and come back and do all those things, you know,
mm-hmm.
And I mean, any stitch like that, a Jessica stitch, any of them, once you've done a few, you can just do them because your mind knows where to go and what to do and how to do it.
Yep. Yeah.
This one is not speaking to me in that way at all, mm-hmm. at all. It's like, okay, I did that stitch. All right, now step two, refer to the diagram. All right, do this. Okay, got that. Mm-hmm. Now where does step three go? Oh, it goes here, and then it goes over here. All right, I got to count X threads to get to the right spot. And then you start to see that two or three of them will go into or come out of the same hole. Okay, I can get that rhythm down. And then there's on the angle, there's always this long stitch. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where I've messed up, where it goes over several threads to carry the stitch up the ladder. And that's where I've struggled with it. So, I'm confident I'll get it. And I'm confident that when I work on it tonight, I think I have figured out where my mind was misleading me, and that I'll get it and go. And but I must say I'm anxious to get to the next horizontal version so that I could just fly. Yeah, but it's her book is literally every angle, how to get every angle to work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I don't know, unless you've done it a lot, I don't know how you do it without that book or the proper stitch or something, but mm-hmm. this book is just so detailed. And then she shows you how to compensate at the beginning and end. So that looks right.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first time I did the horizontal, I got the whole horizontal done. And then I was looking for how to do the angle, and I flipped the next page. And there it was to compensate for the beginning. Ugh.
Mm.
Who knew? So then tear it all out because then I had to go and do that right. And it looked a lot better. So, you know, it's just part of it. And I think I got cocky and I should have practiced on a doodle cloth, but I didn't. I thought, oh, I can do this. I've got these charts here. Like you said, how hard is it with a chart without a, mm-hmm. you know, with a chart with numbers on it? So I got cocky and went for it. And, I'm certainly paying the price on the diagonal because it has to come out. It's too worn. It looks ragged. Oh. And, so that comes out down to good thread, gets finished off, and we start again. So, I don't know. It's not insurmountable. I mean, to me, it's no different than the first time I tried to do a Walnetto or a Jessica.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you're sitting there, thread in one hand, finger on the chart, you know, and okay, I got to go here and then find it on your canvas. And
go up two and over three, right, and wait, yeah, where am I going? Yeah, yep,
yeah. Yeah. And then you get Jessica, you come around to the backside, make sure you go under, you know, how many times do you just naturally go over and they go, oh yeah, that's right, I got to go under. And
mm-hmm.
So it's that kind of a stitch. And I'm sure that once you do it, it starts to make sense, but this one just doesn't have immediate logic to it. So it's okay. It's okay. Learning. It's a cool looking stitch. So when you're done, but got to learn. Yeah. And I probably see, this is where I'm being an idiot. I really, and now I talk about this with you, I think I need to just get some cheap DMC. Well, just DMC.
And use that.
And use it on the doodle cloth and just beat the crap out of it till I get it down. And then instead of doing it with silk, because that silk, you know, won't take much of a beating and it starts looking frayed. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, nobody said this was going to be an easy one.
Well, you guys started it because you wanted to learn and do something different. Yep. And it sounds like you are learning and doing something different.
Yep.
So.
Oh, yeah. It's been a full success on that front. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Hey, I wanted to ask you, now you and Vanna started the, and I never remember the name of it, the white work sampler that Darlene Osteen's, what is that one called?
It's called the English White Work Sampler. And I have wondered, because there's no information about this, why it is called the English White Work Sampler, because it is this supposed to be based off of English white work techniques as opposed to some other type of white work techniques? Is it, it does not seem to be based off of a particular old sampler. I mean, if it is, there's no information that, you know, that it's you know, that it's a reproduction of something. It doesn't in any way indicate that. So why is it called the English white work sampler? I can't give you an answer for that. But yeah, Vanna had posted some pictures that she was going to get Stardust. And it was, you know, it just appealed to me in the times and in the moment that she was posting it. I was, you know, we've talked on here a lot about sometimes when you are, when you just need to do something a little different.
Oh yeah.
You know,
yeah.
When it comes to your stitching. And I was in a stretch of just doing multiple cross stitch projects one after the other. And I guess what I realized is I just really needed to do something a little different. And right at the time that Ivana posted that English white work sampler, that she had picked up the pattern and the thread and the fabric and she was going to get started with it, I'm like, you know what? That is the kind of thing that is really appealing to me.
Yeah.
Even though I will say that the cover image is not particularly clear. You have to do a little guessing of what's exactly going on there. There's definitely some hard anger, some drawn thread. There's some exactly what's involved, but basically it's a lot of different types of stitches that are being done on fabric. And so I, you know, and then it also seemed meant to be when I contacted my LNS and they had the pattern in stock. This was not a case where they needed to order it for me. And I was like, you know what? I think this is what I need to be doing. And so yeah. I got the pattern. Now the what's written on the back of it, and I thought this was interesting. Again, you can't really tell very much from the pictures. Does have the that they did it on cream linen with cream or with ecru threads, and I've chosen to get a white fabric and white threads. So, but I know that Vanna's using ecru threads, and I forget exactly what color. Or at least what the name of her fabric it is, but it matches the ecru threads, I think, very nicely when she's posted pictures. So I worked on it for it was about a week or so, and it so did what I needed it to do, which was to give me a break from the cross stitch that I was working on at the time. Now, Vanna and I seem to both have hit the same.
I noticed that.
We both got frustrated or annoyed. Maybe annoyed is the best word with the eyelets. There is an entire alphabet that is made up of eyelets. Actually, in all honesty, there are two alphabets that are made up of eyelets.
Those are a pain. They're just a pain.
They are, and it was. I know when I posted a picture on Instagram and made a comment basically agreeing with Vanna that I wasn't really liking these eyelets, I had at least one person, and I feel like Vanna probably also had the same comments of people who have said when they stitched this or stitched something similar to this or whatever, that they changed the eyelets or some of the eyelets or the second alphabet to Smyrna crosses. Oh. And I was really liking that idea.
Yeah.
So I think,
yeah, because you can do 100 Smyrna crosses in the time it takes to do two eyelets. Yes.
Yeah. So the idea of persevering through one alphabet of eyelets and then rewarding myself with the second alphabet of Smyrna crosses sounds like appealing to me. But where basically the project is that project is on hold because I did go back to stitching on a model for a new pattern that I'm working on right now, a Works by ABC pattern. And what working on the white work sampler did just provided me that little break that I needed of the cross stitch. You know, I stopped cross stitching for a little bit. I was working on these, you know, I had eyelets, I had a four-sided stitch, I had satin stitches, and that was a little bit of a break. And I genuinely thought what I was going to do was alternate, you know, which is totally not my style, but I thought, okay, one night cross stitch, one night white work, one night cross stitch, one night work. And, instead I actually have been working on this cross stitch pretty consistently, mostly because I just want to get it done. And I think I will then reward myself with at least some period of time working on the white work sampler before I go back to, you know, working on the next, you know, Works by ABC pattern. Or model. But it's nice that I now have, and I have it sitting out. I leave it sitting out and just looking at it, because what I'm anxious to do is to get, to be honest, to get to some of the bands that are below where I'm currently working. So it's almost like you have to do a thread of eyelets and then reward yourself with a thread of satin stitches and then say, okay, some more eyelets now. And then you get to reward yourself with some more satin stitching or, yeah. You know, that's how it's yeah. what it's going to take to get through the parts that maybe are not as enjoyable. Because I would love to get to some of the lower bands that are on this. It is a long, it will be long. I'm doing it on 40 count fabric as Vonna is also. And on 40 count, it's 9 inches wide, so not that wide, but it's going to be 24.5 inches long. Wow. So it is I was wondering how that matches up to the Queen sampler in terms of dimensions. Do you happen to know that off the top of your?
No, but it's got to be pretty close.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, yeah, maybe the Queen isn't as long, but yeah, it's got to be pretty close. Yeah. yeah. It's got to be 9 or 10 inches wide. That's probably not too far off. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which would make sense. Same designer. Yeah.
Yep. Same designer. So,
those eyelets, that's whenever I run into those, that's my approach is okay. You gotta pay the price, do two letters and then go do something fun because.
Yeah. Well, and I also, it's been a long time since I've done something like a band sampler, but what's nice about it is that, so I have different bands that have been started. So I have this alphabet band that started. I have a four-sided stitch. Well, that band is almost done, and it's almost not even a band. It's just the four-sided stitch in between bands, and then the satin stitch band. And you can, like, I might start another band even below it, and then you have just variety going on any given night that I might work on it. I could choose which band do I want to work on tonight, that I'm not going to limit myself to saying I must finish this band before I go on to the next. That's what I realized. Like I totally thought that's how I was going to stitch this, but having hit that eyelet alphabet, I realized if I put that rule in place for myself, I would never get, or it would just never get done. And so once you have to ease up on the rules for yourself, so I am just, I am tremendously grateful for Vonna for introducing this pattern to me. And, you know, of course, I think the irony of, you know, how many patterns, including some of them that I have kitted up, like how many things I could have started without having to go and purchase something brand new, but it doesn't matter. It's okay. I did. I purchased something brand new and I'm glad to have started it. And it's very pretty. I've done a few all white projects in my life. It's been a long time since I've done one like this. And I think it's a very pretty thing. The key is good lighting. That is absolutely, but once you have good lighting, I have my Ott light above me, but then I also use a second smaller clip on light directly on it and I'm good to go. So you haven't seen any pictures posted on it, 'cause I have been working on a cross-stitch design in the last couple of weeks, but you will know when I'm back working on it because you'll see some posts on Instagram on it.
Yeah, when she mentioned that, my first thought was, oh, I want to do that. But then the little voice said, reminded me that I have fully kitted up. It's the Elizabethan something that I got at the Attic.
Okay.
Which is a white work sampler.
And we talked about that.
Yes. And so it was, no, you're not. You already have one. That's the same kind of stuff. Do that one. And so I stopped. Yeah. Plus.
But you could start that one.
I know. As soon as I master the Montenegrin stitch, I will.
Okay. All right. I'm going to hold you to that.
As soon as I master it now. Master it.
No. Not as soon as you're done with that band.
No. Because there's no way that'll be a mastery. No way. No. It's interesting. Because, you're a completely monogamous stitcher. And,
for the most part, yes.
Yeah. And, but that whole mental approach where I need a break,
mm-hmm.
you know, that works both ways. I mean, I do that. I call it mindless stitching, where if I'm doing something complex, you know, after a while, I just need a mindless stitching. I just need one where you can just sit there and move the needle and, you know, maybe do a little counting, but it's, you know, everything's obvious. And I have a couple of needlepoint designers that really do some nice work with just the most basic of things, and it's just mindless. And I think you need that either way. If you're doing mindless, you know, mindless cross stitching, sometimes, yeah, you need to exercise the brain a little bit. You need that back and forth, and it keep. I think it helps you stay fresh.
Yes.
Now, of course, the downside, and that's the side that I've taken, is you have to discipline yourself, because then, you know, well, all right, for mindless, I'm going to do this other thing over here, and pretty soon there's half a dozen of them going, and none of them are getting done. But I think there's something to that in terms of keeping you mentally fresh and stretched. And then to be able to go back to something simple, or to go from something complex and go do something simple, is I think there's real value in that. And it doesn't have to be a giant project on either end. It can just be, you know, you might go have a little simple thing, a small ornament or something. But I think there's value there. Yeah.
There's some, you know, there's another aspect to the variety, or that exact thing that I realize I've done for many years, although in this last few months I had not been practicing, which is for many years when even before I started Works by ABC, when I'd be stitching something that I had designed myself, it was inevitable that after I finished a big project that I designed myself, I would then want to do a project that was just follow a pattern. And it didn't matter if it was a complex pattern or a simple pattern. It was follow a pattern. I don't want to have to make decisions here, you know? And with the last number of months, I've been doing almost exclusively a lot of stitching of models of my Works by ABC things. And true that by the time I get to stitching, there isn't too many decisions to be made. It still is something that I've created, and it still feels like it's not quite just follow a pattern, because I still have some things that I might still be working out. And there was this need of, I just want to follow a pattern, you know, I just want to do something that someone else has laid out for a little bit. And in this case, a little complex, but, that balance is well needed. Or at least I find it's well needed in my life, to go back and forth between, something that I've created and something that someone else has created. And I just always need to remind myself of that.
You're someone who does several techniques. Do you find it difficult to switch, say, to go to a canvas work piece or a white work piece?
Not the only difficulty is like in the first night or two, when my eyes might be adjusting between, oh, I was just working on 40 count fabric and now I'm working on 18 count canvas.
Yeah. There's that weird, thing. Yeah.
That weird thing. But no, I think it's part of the element of keeping fresh and keeping different, or, you know, and again, the difference between working one strand of silk versus, you know, purl eight cotton thread, you know, that there's a, you know, the thickness of thread or something like that.
Pearl cotton that feels like rope after you've done silk for
exactly, or a size 24 needle from a 28 needle, or vice versa, and you feel like you're holding a tree trunk in your hand. But again, I think all of that is part of the elements of keeping things fresh and different. And if I've worked on something in one of those aspects for too long, it's time to do something a little different. And I realize that sounds like the kind, there are plenty of stitchers out there that, you know, work on a different project every night or a different every week or whatever their rotation might be. And I'm not quite like that. My needs just, different ground cloth, different threads, different needles, different types of stitching. That's just the way I like it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the way I like it too. And there's always that initial, if you switch to a completely different technique, initial mind adjustment. This needle feels like a tree trunk. Yeah. But no, I don't, as a rule, have trouble. It's, you just flip over, your mind adjusts, and off you go.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, yeah, I enjoy doing different techniques. I mean, it's just what interests me, keeps things fresh, and make sure you never complete anything.
Oh, Gary, we need to work with you. No, you complete things.
Yeah, I do, but not at any rate. That's for sure. Oh. That's for sure. Yeah, I've never done the formal rotation. I don't if I'm in the middle of something like this Queen Sampler right now, I really just don't have any interest in working on anything else. I mean, it's got me challenged. I want to keep going. And every time I get over a hump with a stitch or mm-hmm. with a band, it's like a victory, and I want the next one. And
that's awesome.
So I've got no interest right now in switching on to something else, but I'm sure I'll reach a point where I want to just go, just make some Smyrna crosses or something, mm-hmm. you know, get out some rope and just do something on 18 canvas where you can pull it just as tight as you want and just fly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Cause you do, your mind needs that break. It's, and I admire people. I was watching, somebody today in England, Little Stitcher, what's her name?
I don't know.
You know, a professional would write these things down. But anyway, she was giving a four-part tutorial on a solid cover cross stitch.
Hmm. Like how she manages the threads?
Yeah, she does everything. So she was taking it from the beginning to end. What, you know, how do you determine what thread count? And she took it all the way through for heaven and earth design type things.
Okay.
And, you know, and she showed a couple that she'd finished and they were really quite beautiful because heaven and earth designs, a lot of them are just stunning. Even if they mm-hmm. are just wall to wall cross stitches, they're just beautiful. Doesn't appeal to me, but they really are. And I admire people who can sit there and do that for, in many cases, years.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who are just addicted to them, it's all they do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I admire that, but by the same token, it's always my head is going, oh, I couldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to go do something else. And maybe they do. But, Michelle Garrett is doing that one with the woman with the octopus head. But she also mixes in a whole bunch of other things. So she, yep. there's no way she's getting bored with that. But it's those just amaze me when people do those big, small, or otherwise, those full coverage things. It's just a different world.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yep. Absolutely.
Not mine, but it's a different world.
Yeah.
I mean, I like on needlepoint stuff, I like to have the canvas covered. Now, I used to not have any interest in something that didn't fully cover the canvas, but now I've gone the other way around and I'm all about stuff where there's some open spaces and some freedom for the eye to move. I think it's, mm-hmm. yeah.
Oh, that's what I love about the counted canvas work is when there's open spaces and different textures and some places where you see the canvas showing and other places where it's fully covered. I mean, I like that look that has come out that it's not just a fully covered
yeah.
piece.
Yeah. Yeah. I've come 180 degrees on that. And, mm-hmm. and, but see, that came from my early days of basket weave wall to wall.
Oh, know, okay.
Which I have no interest in ever doing again.
Mm-hmm.
here's your wool thread and your 12 or 13 count canvas and go ahead, fill it in with basket weave. Oh, geez. Mm. Yeah. Mm. I'll do the design and then I'll pay somebody to do the background. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Boring.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's the part that today is I think so neat about any of them, but particularly needlepoint is that really isn't done much anymore. I mean, there are still people who do nothing but basket weave and,
mm-hmm.
but, most people, there's plenty of variation and then basket weave becomes another tool
mm-hmm.
for finer detail or contrast or whatever it might be. And yeah, I still admire people who can do solid cover cross stitch and make it look just right. And people who can do wall to wall basket weave and not have any bumps or anything. That's that's talent. It's a lot of hours too.
Yes, absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. Somebody told me once that to be a good basket weave stitcher, you needed to do it. Was it for an hour every day?
For how many days?
Like always. So you don't lose your edge.
Oh, okay.
That was my reaction too. Oh, never mind.
Well, I mean, you could say that. Isn't there something about, I'm not going to get this right, but there's all kinds of things. To do something, you need to be doing it for 1,000. To do something well.
Is it 10,000 hours?
You could hear the variety. 1,000 hours, 10,000 hours. It depends what the thing is that you might be talking about. And then there's some things like, for example, you could tell me to, I don't know, play basketball for 10,000 hours. I will. There's no way I'm going to get good at it, even if I did play for 10,000 hours.
Yep.
So, you know, I don't quite buy into that whole idea. I get the theory behind it, but I don't completely buy into it. There's some element of, there's got to be desire. There's got to be, in some cases, skill.
Yeah, that's my standard response. Do you play basketball? Well, I can't shoot and I can't dribble, so no.
Yeah.
I can run him down the court and I can throw a ball at the next guy. But after that, no. Mm-mm. Pass. And not that I haven't tried, but pass.
Mm-hmm.
No good. Yep. Well, all right. That's. Okay. There we have it. Let's go. You know, we started 2 times ago with a nice long list of you have to choose. And we had some things.
Yes, we did.
And then we didn't do them. Well, we did some, and then
we did some, and then we ran out of time, and then we didn't return to it the last time we spoke, but
because we ran out of time.
Yes,
happens.
Yes.
Okay, so let's try some of these long lists that's left. So your holding device.
Yes.
You got to choose one: in hand, hoop, stretcher bar, Q snap, scroll bar, slate frame.
So, if I have to choose, I want to go with scroll bar, but that's for fabric. Like,
yes.
If I have to choose and I'm in the middle of a canvas work project, I'm not going to put canvas work on a scroll bar.
No.
Like I want to put all these like caveats to my have to choose one, but in general, I am a scroll bar person. I have some hoops. I have a couple sets of Q snaps. I will use those items when, for whatever reason, they might be appropriate. Mostly having to do with the size of the piece of fabric I might be working on. But in general, I will like to choose the scroll bars that I use, that I have, over most other, I mean, if I'm doing something really small, then a hoop I get is the appropriate holding device. But I like scroll bars. I like the scroll bar set that I have. What is your choice in that?
Well, I think you described it. I don't think there really is a choice. Cause if I'm using cloth, linen, Aida, then if it's small enough, then I want to put it on Q snaps.
Okay.
But then if it's big enough, then scroll bar. Or too big for Q snaps where they just get unwieldy, then it's a scroll bar. See, I this was interesting. You know, you got to choose one, and I don't think there is one. Because it does. It depends on your canvas. Like canvas on stretcher bars, you know, as big as you can handle that stretcher bar, that's the way to go. Especially now with Evertights and other designs where you can keep that just rock solid tight. There's no reason to do it otherwise. To me, everything needs to be held, and, you know, stitching in hand, you know, it still impresses me. People who do that and can just fly along and they get done and it's just beautiful. And to me, it's just gotta be held. It's gotta be held tight. With something, have you ever used a slate frame?
No, I have not. Have you?
No, that is absolutely near the top bucket list thing.
Really?
Yeah, I want to see what that's like because, boy, everything I've read and, you know, people I've talked to, you can get that canvas or linen or whatever so tight and so square that just really, and it stays that way. And that just really appeals to me. Huh. But the apparatus for some of those, if it's any size, you know, the framework to hold it up so you can work on it. Yeah. Talk about sucking up space, but
yeah. And which is the reason it's not really on a bucket list of mine is that it just seems a little too unwieldy to have to use. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I suppose if I had the opportunity to try it out at somebody's home or, you know, if I was somewhere and someone said, oh, here's my slate frame. Do you want to see what it's like? Sure, I'd try it out. But it just seems like the pictures I've seen, the descriptions I've seen, it does seem unwieldy when I am pretty happy with the tension that I can get on the devices that I have, whether, like I said, most of the time being using my scroll frame or as needed poops or Q snaps.
Yeah. I just want to try it. I want to see what that's like, you know, I've done a lot of research on this cause I'm just curious about it. Apparently if you're going to use these, it's a long-term project time you get it all set up and everything, mm-hmm. you know, that's a project in itself. So you set it up and it's a longer term project, not something mm-hmm. you're going to knock out in a couple of weeks. I don't know. I just really want to try that. I guess I just got to spend the money and get it. And then what Ilka Cochran, where she's doing the Royal School classes and that, you know, the slate frame goes hand in hand with that. Mm-hmm. And then she had sawhorses or something that she was using. I forget what she had. I think it was sawhorses that she was using to hold the thing up rather than have the big apparatus because those things take up a lot of space. But I don't know. That one just sits out there just saying, try me, try me. So, I don't know. Do you wrap your hoops?
I do not wrap my hoops.
Okay.
I don't go to some of the prep details that I've read about or that I've that might be quote proper ways. I will say this, I will only use a hoop on a project when the hoop is larger than the size of the project. Cause I think about hoop marks.
Yes.
So,
thank you.
Okay. So, I get, at least I think I understand that the purpose of wrapping a hoop is to help give it better tension. Is that, am I understanding that correctly?
Game changing. Yes. Game changing. Not only give you better tension, but hold it.
But if I think that the hoop that I'm using gives it good tension and it's perfectly good tension. And why do I put more effort into wrapping it when I don't feel like I need to even put that much extra effort into it? It is a little bit where I'm coming from. Now, that said, if someone were to hand me a wrapped hoop and I were to try it out, who knows what I would think. But I have never taken the time to wrap a hoop because I've used the hoops that I tend to use are I don't have them sitting in front of me and I'm not near where they are. I bought a set. They're plastic. They have a really good tight tension and I can't tell you what is it about them because they're not in front of me that just provides good tension. I don't know. I don't need any more tension than I think it provides is I guess what I'm saying.
I don't need any more tension in my life. Leave me alone.
Exactly. I don't need more tension. Okay. But I take it. When and if you use a hoop, you've wrapped them. Is that a plastic?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I use wooden hoops. I don't care for the plastic ones. Never have.
Okay.
So I use just Hardwick Manor wood hoops, and I wrap them, And because you just have to wrap them once. It's not like it's an ongoing project.
Yeah.
You just have to do them once. Oh, I swear by it. Oh, yeah. I think it's easier to get the cloth in there and get it tent, you know, get the tension, and then it stays that way. Yeah, I'm a firm believer. And I just use the Mary Corbett twill tape wrap thing. Somebody, I saw one the other day. They literally had taken twill tape off and were cutting rectangles of cloth and folding them over and putting them on the hoop. And I have to see if I can find that again, because I didn't understand that at all. That because the twill tape, you know, is rough. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it holds. Boy, I tell you, it holds. I think it's worth it. But if you know, some of those plastic ones, like those ones with that the spring bar in the middle in the inside.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know you can get good tension on those. I just always feel like the plastic edges are a little rough on the ground cloth, so I just don't care for them.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had others. I had tried other plastic ones, and they kept slipping. So I guess I just got turned off. They were probably cheap Kmart, you know, whatever. And, but yeah, so I just use wood and wrap them. I'm a firm believer in that. Yeah. But, oh, I agree with you 100%. If I use a hoop, it's got to be a hoop that's bigger than the project, or I'll go to something else. Yeah. I don't like stitching and then moving it and having it, the stitches crushed under the hoop.
Yeah. And I know lots of people do that.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
It works for them. It's just not what works for me, I guess I could say. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, people do that, and people have done it for decades,
mm-hmm.
hundreds of years. And, yeah, it's fairly normal, but yeah, I just don't. Yep. And I'll go to the pretty big hoop to make sure it's bigger than the than the project. Yeah. It's like these little Santas that I'm using for my travel project. I think I'm using a 10-inch hoop by... Mm-hmm. Is it 3/4 inch thick? Something ridiculous like that. It's like, I'm sure it's a quilter's hoop. But, you know, I put that thing in there, holds it drum tight, and off I go. But yeah, it's considerably bigger than the actual piece. And that's just what I want. Yep. Yep. All right. So then we'll go to the other thing, floor stand, lap stand, or no stand.
Well, floor stand is absolutely my preference. I love to work when I'm here at home. I will always work on my floor stand, or using my floor stand, which I can attach my scroll frame to, I can attach a hoop to, I can attach Q snaps to, I can attach stretcher bars to. So floor stand, I could stitch using both hands, or if I'm not necessarily using both hands at a time, I have both hands free for any moment that I want to use both hands. When I getting together with stitching friends, and so I'm taking my stitching somewhere, which doesn't happen that often. I've never gone to the effort of taking my floor stand with me, so I have to adjust, and I tend to always have that moment of discomfort, because I'm like, have to adjust, how am I holding it? What, you know, what's right. different here, you know?
Right.
But it's not to the point that I will ever bother taking my floor stand with me, because that's just too much trouble. But I know there are people who will, they'll go to a retreat and they won't even think about attending that retreat unless they've taken their floor stand with them. I'm not so wedded to my floor stand that I have to take it with me when I go on a retreat, for example. I do miss it when I'm there, or like just a few days ago, I was at a monthly stitching gathering and I took my project, which is on scroll frame, off of my floor stand and was just working on it. And actually it worked really well that I guess it was sort of in the crook of my elbow and then, or my arm, and then had the other end kind of propped against the table, and it worked. I made it work, you know? But it's, you know, I'm flexible enough that I can survive without my floor stand. I'll put it that way. How about you? What are you?
Well, floor stand for all the reasons. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Everything in a floor stand, that you can. I want both hands free, and I don't want to hang on to that piece. And if I'm driving somewhere and going to be there for a while, 3, 4, 5 days, whatever it is, I will break down and take a floor stand.
You will. Okay.
Yeah. If I'm driving, obviously, okay. If I'm flying, no.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, then, but then I take my lap stand and then I have a travel project, my old world Santas, and they're small projects. So the whole thing can fit in my backpack with my laptop. And, then I'll set that up in the hotel room and just leave it. And with a magnifier light and, yeah, I gotta have that. 'Cause that whole scene of propping a scroll frame against a table, holding it in the crook of your arm. Yeah. You can make it work, but you're not as efficient.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I always just feel like I'm just kind of forcing it. So if I can't have a lap stand with me, then I just won't even bother.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
And I really should do something like these Santas are on hoops. Now there's no reason other than it's 40 count linen, which I need a magnifier and a light for.
Uh-huh.
But you know, a hoop, I think I could tolerate for a while, but I just like having both hands. That to me, that's the key.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just be able to just go. So, yeah. Yeah. And the floor stand, boy, I'll tell you, that's, to me, there's nothing like that. You get that set up with a nice magnifier light and everything's right there and you can just, your hands are free and it's, yeah, nothing like it. And I have that System 4 stand, boy, I'll tell you, someday I think maybe, because those, the travel version, you can at least get in your suitcase.
Mm-hmm.
But I never check a bag. I never have that much room. You know, I always, like when I travel, I have a bag, a carry-on suitcase that's usually full of clothes, and then my backpack, and I get my stitching stuff in there along with my work stuff, and that's it. So, yeah, I don't want to check bags unless I have to. So, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But yeah, I have. A couple summers ago, we rented a house across the street from our daughter and son-in-law's, and took my stand because we were going to be there 10 days. And,
okay.
And Cooper, the oldest grandson, who was 2+ then, when he's come to visit here and he sees that stand, he says, "I helped set that up," and because he remembers. He remembers holding the pieces for me as I put it together.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, it's always cute. Yeah, he remembers that.
That's sweet.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Hmm.
All right, one more. Oh, my. Time flies. One more. Can we?
How about?
Okay, go ahead.
Were you going to say, can we live without DMC?
Yep, I was.
Yes.
I was.
So.
Go ahead. Can we?
I think the answer is no. Yep. I think it is such a part of the general vocabulary that we all stitchers need to have. I mean, it's so available, at least here in the U.S. You know, I guess I should preface this with that, just the way I hear some people talk online on floss tubes and so on about difficulty of getting it in different places. But here in the U.S., it's the common language that we can use to talk about colors, to talk about patterns and stitching. It is relatively easily accessible at the large big box stores, and to the point where there's some LNSs that don't even bother carrying it because it's available in other places. I'm going to go back to that word. It's the language we talk about, because when you're talking about a specialty floss, a Weeks, a Gentle Arts, a classic Colorworks, very often I find myself saying, well, it's halfway between this number and this number of DMC, or it's close to this number of DMC, but it's a little redder, or it's a little more purple, or it's a little more whatever. And I just love that we have this numbering system to use as our common language. And I like that, at least in my world, it's easily accessible. I like that it's something that stitchers can talk about easily and know what we're talking about amongst ourselves. I love that when I've talked about this with other stitchers, I'm looking at a clock and I see that it's, 9:31, and it might be 9:31 at night, but I can also picture what color blue that is, that there's things like that, that come up, that it's just, I love that it's part of our world in that way. And so I don't think we could live without DMC. What's your thought?
Well, see, if you took it as nothing more than a thread, I could make an argument for yes. But that argument goes away immediately when you start doing it like you just described, mm-hmm. where everything else is referenced against those numbers and those colors. Mm-hmm. And then you simply can't get away from it. You can't do without it. And I don't think you want to do without it. Mm-hmm. And I think from an economic perspective, the value it provides is it makes needlework affordable.
Yes. Yeah.
And it lowers that barrier to entry considerably. Mm-hmm. So you can get in, a piece of Aida cloth and a few skeins of DMC and a needle, and you're off to the races.
Yep.
And that may be its biggest value, other than the tremendous range of colors and all those things, but it's that ability to allow new people to enter the hobby, mm-hmm. that I think is just huge. But yeah, you're exactly right. When people start saying, well, it's very close to 9:31, and people know what that means. That's very much not the fabric of the hobby, but the very, the very bones and structure of the hobby. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can't do without that. And it's interesting that it became DMC. That's a history thing, but it's interesting to me that it didn't become Anchor or something else. It must have been that they were providing the quality and the color range. It had to have been the color range that just put them far enough ahead. And the quality, there's no question about the quality. I mean, do you ever hear anybody complain about the quality of DMC?
No.
It's a constant. It's just a mm-hmm. given. Yeah. So.
It has all those pieces. It has, as you said, the economic piece. It has the quality piece. It has it covers like the breadth of the stitchers that are out there. I mean, that came up in our conversation, things like heaven and earth designs. How could you get the beauty of those without having that range of colors? Although, I mean, someone could say, but there's other color lines that have those range of, that have that many colors. Sure. Not at that economic or affordable price.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You just take a standard mid-sized heaven and earth design and price out the threads you need in silk and in DMC.
Yeah.
You'll stitch DMC every day. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Because even there, at one I looked at not too long ago was had 85 or 90 colors.
Which is about their standard.
Right. And then you take that times average of two skeins.
I wouldn't even know how many.
One or two skeins. So it say 90 colors, and then half of them had to have two skeins. Mm-hmm. That's 135 skeins times 50 cents. You're still spending a lot of money for thread.
You are. And it's nothing compared to what you'd spend if you were doing it in silk.
Oh, yeah.
There's just so much to be said about having, again, I go back to like that common language, we all know what we're talking about, that so many patterns have that DMC conversion, whatever unique and specialty threads have been used, there is also the DMC conversion.
Yep.
So that, again, it becomes a place where a stitcher can start if they don't want or can't afford the specialty threads or can't get access to the specialty threads. These are good. It's the quality again. It's good quality threads. They're not crappy threads. They're not
no.
cheap threads. And there's beautiful colors to be found among the 400 something, whatever that yeah. exists. So it would be really hard to imagine a stitching world without DMC. That is really hard to picture, which I'm sure the DMC company is very aware of.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, and then the color fastness. How many things get stitched that need to be washed that you just couldn't do in anything other than DMC?
Something that's color fast, yeah. No, that's true.
Yeah, it simply wouldn't be an option. Mm-hmm. And so in terms of functional needlework, little hand towels and those kinds of things, what else are you going to use? There really isn't anything, is there?
No. Well, very, very few options, let's put it that way.
I mean, you could anchor thread if you can get a hold of it. Which I assume is color fast. And yeah, there are some, but it's very limited and not the color range you'd have with DMC. And that's one of those things like scissors and needles. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can't do without them. No. All right. Let's stop.
Okay.
That's amazing. Oh. You know, it's amazing we do these things. We'll start and I'll look down at the time and we're 10 or 15 minutes in and then it's an hour.
Well, time flies when you're enjoying what you're talking about, and especially when you're talking about stitching. Let's put it that way.
Sunday, Gay Ann Rogers.
Awesome.
Yep. Cannot wait for that. Have not recorded it yet. Cannot wait for it. Gay Ann Rogers, always a treat to talk to her. And she has a sale coming up in October and also has some new design coming up. So it's going to be a 1-2 Gay Ann Rogers because we're going to do this one. And then I'm pretty sure in 4 or 5 weeks, we're going to have her back because, you know, her new designs are always worth the whole show. Mm. Be interesting to see what she comes up with.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yep. One of the great talents, truly. Love to talk to her. So, yes. Sunday is Gay Ann Rogers, and that's it.
Yeah.
Fiber Talk made me buy it.
Yes, it did.
Yep. Get you off the hook when you misbehave. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Thanks for listening.
Thanks. Take care.